Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, a show that features the people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts today, Gail Seiler, and I'm here with my co-host, Ursula Rudenberg. Hello, Ursula.
Hello, Gail, and hello to you, the listener.
We also have with us Max Ennis. Max is a high school student who is part of the Local Talk team. It's great to have such a solid group here for today's show, and we've got some interesting stories for you, and a number of guests will be with us. In the second half of the show, we'll be learning about monarch butterflies and efforts to create monarch habitat, which has been drastically reduced in the Midwest. We'll be joined by Mark Harris, a Story County resident who is rearing butterflies at his home, and by Tressa Blader, a graduate student at ISU who's doing research on monarchs.
And each month on KHOI, we highlight a community group. So this month, reporter Kay Puttock shines the light on the local chapter of the American Legion. And because it's Friday, we'll bring you the live music listings for next week, as well as the upcoming presidential candidates' appearances in our area. This is Iowa, after all. But we are starting off with Susan Guiazda, Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames. Welcome back, Susan. It's great to have you. Susan has graciously agreed to come once a month to keep us updated on what's going on in the city and in terms of activities and also in terms of other issues that just have to do with the city life.
Absolutely. And there's so much going on, I probably could come back more.
Yeah, and we love having you. And we also have Keith Abraham, the Director of Parks and Recreation for the City of Ames. Thanks for being here this morning, Keith. Susan, it's July and it's summer, so that means there's a lot going on in Ames. What would you like to start with?
Well, it is July, and that is sort of the peak of the construction season. I think anybody that's driven or even walked or biked in Ames, very aware that there are lots of streets under construction, and it affects all of us.
Lots of cones down the middle of Lincoln Way.
Absolutely. a lot of major arterials, ways people get to work, to play, just doing their errands. A lot of the traditional ways you might get there are not as easy anymore, and we appreciate so much the residents' patience as we work towards these projects' completion. I think everybody's been aware it's been a bit of a rainy summer. It's been a little bit cooler. And with every construction project, there are also unknowns. Engineer and bid out a construction project, a lot of the times you're dealing with what's above the surface and you have maps and plans for what you think is below the surface, and sometimes those aren't exactly accurate. Hmm. So there often are infrastructure delays. As we get into a project, we realize things aren't exactly where we thought they were. And so projects are incentivized to end at a specific time, and actually some projects are penalized for not ending on the date that they're promised to be completed by.
How does the city penalize itself?
Well, the city contracts those projects.
Oh, the contractors.
Mm-hmm. So we actually engineer most of the street projects and bid those out to our local – we bid them statewide, nationally, actually. And then we have contractors that come in and do the completions. Many of those contracts have penalized – they call them liquidated damages or some type of fee that the contractor must pay if the project is not done in time. But that does not penalize a contractor for weather delays.
Mm-hmm.
So I want Ames residents to understand that we are working as hard as we possibly can to get those projects completed. We want to get them done. The contractors want to get them done to go on to the next project. They lose money when there's delays. And everybody is working towards the same goal.
So what's going to be the focus in July in terms of
streets? Well, let's get some updates out there. 24th Street, which has been on a lot of people's minds, is open. It had been closed for quite a few weeks. And that is a well-traveled east-west arterial in our community. So that is open, and work will continue on that road, but it will be open to traffic. 13th and Stang intersection, that's right by campus.
Mm-hmm.
Please avoid that area on Monday, July 13th and Tuesday, July 14th. You do not want to be on 13th and Stang. Those will be down. Three of those four streets will be down to one lane. And I want people just to imagine that at 8 in the morning or 5 o'clock, you don't want to be driving on 13th and Stang.
And that has to do with streetlights, is that right?
That is a traffic signal update. So that traffic signal is decades old, and it needs to be replaced. And in doing so, they're also adding ADA-compliant sidewalk ramps So they're going to improve those sidewalks. So there's some curb and gutter that needs to be done. And to be working out on the curb and gutter in a street, you need to close the lanes. That's, you know, to make sure the project's done correctly, but also for the safety of the workers. Mm-hmm. And so that's 2 days, next Monday and Tuesday, that you really do not want to go that direction. We know that Lincoln Way continues. There's some resurfacing along Lincoln Way. That project will continue most of the summer. And so as these project updates, as these construction updates continue, we ask people that they go to our Facebook page and look for immediate updates, look on our website for construction updates, and they can certainly call, email, let us know if they have questions. We get that information out as quickly as we can. With construction projects, things can change quickly. So sometimes we're not always able to get out information a few days in advance. Sometimes it's a few hours.
Why is Lincoln Way?
That's a resurfacing. So there are some rough patches along Lincoln Way. That's to make that smooth out and smooth out those joints and do some asphalt resealing, potholes, get that stuff out of there. Streets, once they've been repaired, are pretty much good for 10 to 15 years. Mm-hmm. So once it happens, you probably won't be delayed by that same construction project for quite some time. But it is inconvenient when it does come up, and we understand that, and we just ask for patience. It will all be over soon, and the road will be much more user-friendly.
Okay, thank you. And the construction on the bridge going towards Brookside Park starts when?
I believe that one is slated for later summer.
Okay.
And
so
we'll
keep
you updated on that one. Yeah, these projects, again, they are engineered months and months in advance. We take input from residents who live close to those streets or travel that area. We work on designs. We bid out the projects, and then we schedule them. And, of course, we schedule them staggered. We mm-hmm. don't want the same streets closed. If there's an east-west street that's closed, we don't want to close another east-west street. But with this recent construction season, with the weather and the delays, they have kind of piled up against each other. And so we know it's been extremely inconvenient for residents.
Should we talk about trees for a minute?
Sure. As most people know, the emerald ash borer is an invasive insect. It has larvae that can kill ash trees. We've seen throughout the country that once the emerald ash borer has invaded your community, ash trees do not survive if they're not treated. There is a treatment for emerald ash borer, but it is continuous. What the city has done has been very proactive. We have identified all the ash trees in the public rights-of-ways, in the parks. That's the rights-of-ways. It would be along the streets, in the parking, between the sidewalk and the curb. And we have a removal plan in place. It's a multi-year removal plan. But the great part of this is that there's also a replacement plan. So every time an ash tree is removed, at some point in the future, it will be replaced by a more diversified species of tree. We, in doing the public tree inventory, we realized we were not as diversified as we should be. And in fact, it's very clear that Ames residents love maple trees. We have a lot of maple trees in the area. Ash trees were also very popular when some subdivisions were created. They line the streets with ash trees, and you'll see that in Somerset, in Northridge Heights, a lot of ash trees. And so we want to get in there. Those trees are still fairly young. Get in there earlier and take them out and get them replanted. The City of Ames has been contacted by the Ames Foundation for a partnership program, some collaboration between Ames Foundation and the City of Ames to help fund the replacement of the trees. We're very excited by this potential partnership, and I know that the Ames Foundation will be coming out with more information in the near future.
So this is something that individuals, private people can possibly access?
Absolutely. The Ames Foundation is looking to do some community tree planting where they'll be looking for volunteers to help. They're looking for donations to help. It's very expensive to mm-hmm. take down and replace trees. I don't think people realize how expensive it is, although I'm sure a lot more residents are realizing that if they have ash trees in their own private property. I know people are watching those ash trees pretty carefully and trying to make decisions on what to do. The question really is for most people, do I treat the tree or do I take it down? And when mm-hmm. when do I make that call?
And Keith, you're with us. You're the Director of Parks and Recreation, Keith Abraham. And this is Parks and Recreation Month?
Yes. July, the National Parks and Recreation Association started July as Parks and Recreation Month in 1985. So this is the 30th anniversary. And we are planning some special activities. A couple of those, we are going to be doing a kind of a 1980s skate at the ice arena, disco ball, some fun things with that. And then we also at Bandshell are going to be doing a movie, and we're doing Back to the Future, which was released in 1985. That's going to be on an evening.
Where will that be?
That will be at Bandshell Park.
Okay.
So all of the specific dates, times, and there's other activities that we have going on as well. Those can all be found at our website, which is cityofames.org, and then click on Parks and Recreation.
All right. And should we speak briefly about Ada Hayden? I think there's tours this month at Ada Hayden Park.
Yeah, one of the things that we do is we have a very active Friends of Ada Hayden Park group, and we partner with them to provide we have an intern that does a variety of activities, and one of the things that intern does is coordinates some tours of Ada Hayden, and it may be on a variety of topics. It may be the wetlands. It may be how it's used as an extra water source. Or it may be damselflies and dragonflies. So a variety of topics. We get local experts that come and speak, and you walk around the park, and maybe an hour and a half at most. But that schedule can be found on our website as well.
And these tours are happening in the month of July.
July, yes.
Yeah. It's really easy to take Ada Hayden for granted because it's so beautiful and the folks are so active there. So it's good to know when you actually can do it so that you don't miss these tours.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's nice because people, you're right, people go out there, they love the beauty, but maybe they don't understand the inner workings or some of the intricacies of what happened out at Ada Hayden. So this is a good way for people to get a little more educated on what happens out there.
So if you're interested in a tour, this is the month to do it.
Yes.
All right. Anything else that we should be thinking about? Can you give us an update on the Bandshell concerts?
The municipal band concerts will be going through July. Those are held always every Thursday night. The municipal band starts playing at 8 p.m. and usually prior to that, sometimes 7:30, there's some type of other entertainment that happens beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been going on for a long time. So a lot of people out there. Last night it was a lot of people again. So that will be happening through the month of July as well.
And the concert schedule can be found on the Ames website?
Yeah, it can be found on Ames website as well as Parks and Recreation.
All right, thank you. Susan, anything else that we should talk about?
Oh, well, just one thing as we're looking ahead to the next week. We had a very successful 4th of July pancake and parade event, and we did something different this year. I think most people know that the Grand Marshal this year was Harrison Barnes, and at the pancake breakfast, the mayor read a proclamation proclaiming that Monday, July 13th, was Harrison Barnes Day, and as luck would have it, Harrison Barnes will be back on Monday, July 13th. He will be at City Hall at 8:30 on Monday, and the public is welcome to join us as he kicks off Harrison Barnes Day. He has various activities planned throughout the day, including back to the Ames High School, back to his alma mater at 4:30 that day to sign autographs. We've been very grateful to Harrison for helping the city of Ames through Ames Public Library, where he has really encouraged students to read. He has done videos for the city of Ames promoting our great water, our electric conservation, our Homewood Golf Course. We particularly love Harrison's take on golfing. But we're happy to welcome him back on Monday, July 13th.
And a great way to kick off Harrison Barnes Day is hear him on KHOI at 7:30 in the morning on Monday. So, yeah, we're real excited to have him come and visit. All right. Well, thank you. We actually covered quite a bit of territory pretty quickly. So that's the month of July in the city of Ames, construction, concerts, Ada Hayden, and the continuing saga of the ash trees.
Absolutely. And anytime somebody wants an update on City of Ames information, we obviously direct them to our website. That is, again, cityofames.org. We also have active social media pages. We're on Facebook and Twitter. So feel free to contact us.
So we'll turn the attention a little bit
and think about summer as a time where we want young people to be outside and enjoying nature. And Max has been following a story related to that, and so he's going to talk with Keith now about that particular issue.
Thanks, Gail. Earlier this summer, a group of young people built a fort in the Munn Woods. And listeners may remember that we interviewed them for Local Talk. These fort kids learned that constructing recreational buildings on public land is not allowed under a conservation easement with the city. The fort has been taken down due to instability caused by heavy rain. Can you explain to us what the conservation easement means?
Yeah, first I'll tell you, Max, is that the city stance on this is we don't allow structures or other items to be built on city property at all and within the park system. And we've had requests for people that, hey, my yard is small. Can I put a swing set, you know, on the parkland? Can I expand my landscaping into the park? Can I do a variety of things? Can I mow the park? Can I mow a trail? And our answer is always no. Those types of things, it's not for your personal use. And we have a lot of encroachment issues that that we have dealt with. So that's our stance with the park system as a whole. Now, when you get into Munn Woods, there is a conservation easement. And that easement is not for the entire park system. It's just for Munn Woods. And the reason for that is Munn Woods was purchased by the Munn family. I think Hiram Munn bought it for his birthday present for his wife. And developers wanted to develop that land. And what they had done is they did not want to keep that or turn it over to developers. So what happened is the Iowa Heritage Natural Heritage Foundation, they wound up purchasing the Munn Woods. They then deeded it over to the city, and part of that deed was to put a conservation easement in place so the property would remain pristine and as natural as possible. And there are a lot of things that are prohibited, you know, in Munn Woods itself, and one of those is any structure.
So there's no possibility of this easement being changed?
The easement in Munn Woods, I would say no.
Would it have mattered if they built the fort in a park but not in Munn Woods?
If they would have built it in another park within the system, we would have taken the same stance. Now, the kids are planning on coming to our Parks and Recreation Commission meeting, which is next week, Thursday, July 16th, and they're going to, you know, ask for the commission to consider setting aside some part of a park for this type of activity to happen. Our stance from a staff is still to say no. There's a liability issue. There's the look. There's the aesthetics. There's the safety. There's all of that kind of stuff. So our stance will still be to recommend to the commission to not allow this type of activity.
The Fort Kids have received a lot of public support, particularly on social media. How has the city been handling or responding to their support that these kids have received?
Well, we've had some conversation with the kids themselves in regards to the public support. You know, we have received a couple of phone calls, a couple of emails saying, you know, just let them do it. They're kids. And then we've had some support on the other side that, hey, we like the stance that you're taking. It's not their property. They need to be asking permission. People can't just go into the park system and do whatever they want. So there has been we have not received a lot of personal contact, you know, from the public in regards to phone calls or emails. But we have received a couple on both sides of the fence.
So is there any plan put forth by Parks and Rec to allow this sort of building on any public land?
Well, that's what the commission meeting on Thursday, you know, will that discussion will happen, and the kids will have an opportunity to explain why they think this is important. And the commission will, you know, they have the authority to change the rules within the park system. Like I said, our stance as staff will be to recommend, you know, no. There are proper channels, and that's what we've told the kids, is that, you know, there are ways to go about this, you know, this stuff. One of the concerns, too, that we have, Max, is you know, with forts, you know, we can't just allow any type of structure or anything to happen within the park system. Because again, then we would have more of the encroachment issue, I believe, than what we have already.
What were those channels that you told the kids were the proper approach to building a fort that you mentioned earlier?
Okay. Well, Joshua Thompson, our Parks and Facilities Supervisor or Superintendent, he's had a couple of conversations with the kids, and then Joshua and I went out and talked to a couple of the kids on a day as well, just to kind of mention what was going to be going on.
Because it's Munn Woods and they have that extra protective measure because it was deeded to the city by the family, does that, it sounds like that protects that in different ways that would be harder to change.
Correct. And it wasn't deeded to the city from the family. Okay. The Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation, they actually purchased the property and then they turned it over to the city. And part of that turning over to the city granted the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation this conservation easement. Again, the wishes of the Munn family was to keep it pristine and natural and for all to enjoy. And there's some other things, too, that, even going in and putting asphalt paths, through Munn Woods is not a possibility. We can do crushed stone. We can do wood, chips. We can do some different things. Even, expanding, there are some easements for utilities, through Munn Woods. Those are part of the agreement as well. But we can expand, those utility easements as well.
Mm-hmm. Keith, I'm interested. You've really explained very well why the city is saying no to these things and the kind of very important reasons behind that. I wanted to ask you about the other side of the coin. I mean, part of growing up in Ames is building forts in woods. I built forts in woods my whole childhood. I know almost most kids I know in Ames did that because that's part of life in Ames for a kid. And where does the city see a space for that? Or where is there any sort of acknowledgement on the part of the city that this is kind of a normal activity and relatively transient activity? I mean, the fort itself is already gone.
Yeah.
And that this is part of really play.
Right. Well, and some of the things that, that the kids have mentioned in regards to being in the woods, we are in the business of getting people outside. We want people to be active. We want them to be out there. And some of the things they talked about, sitting, getting together with a group of people, talking, discussing things, that can be done anywhere in the park system. You can pull up a log. You can sit on there. And in regards to some of the forts, when there are some times when we see what we call a lean-to, where people are just taking some down branches, making a little lean-to, they put a log to sit on underneath it. Those kinds of things we don't get too concerned about. This fort was different in many ways. It was, put together. There was a lot of material brought in. There was dimensional lumber. There was a roof. There's a lot of other types of things that were brought in that were not natural to the environment. And that's one of the things that maybe a differentiation between, just using some of the products that are out there versus, having this very elaborate, type of fort. When you start nailing things together, attaching it together, it is not necessarily a temporary structure. So now one of the things also is they brought a lot of other items in, inside that fort. There were chairs, there were CDs, there was a lot of other types of material that were brought in, and that we would discourage because generally when that stuff happens, stuff gets left behind and then we have, the litter issue and somebody has to clean it up. If it's one of those things where you're just going in, do a quick little, lean-to, that kind of stuff we don't get too concerned about.
Well, we want to thank both of you.
Yeah, it's great to hear different perspectives on that particular issue and then to be updated on everything else that's going on in the city. You're listening to KHOI Radio, Local Talk. We bring you this People, Stories, and Events of Central Iowa. Next, we have our Community Appreciation segment.
I have today in the studio Doug McCrae, who's the post commander of the American Legion here in Ames. And he's going to tell us about the American Legion and the services it offers. It's basically a service organization. Welcome, Doug, and thank you. Welcome to Local Talk.
Thank you for having me here today.
Would you like to talk about some of the services you offer?
As a veteran service organization, we will help veterans resolve claims with the VA. We also develop and provide programs that help the families of veterans. We promote what we can call Americanism, which are things that help promote not only an individual's growth within the community, but the community itself, things like baseball, junior shooting sports. We conduct an oratorical contest every year for high school students where they have the opportunity to earn scholarships. We conduct a flag essay contest for elementary school students. We ask the basically third grader to write an essay about the U.S. flag and what it means to them.
Oh, okay. I see. Flag essay.
Flag, yes. Yeah. So a lot of things along those lines. Our goal is to help veterans and their families. And you need to be a member of the American Legion if you are a veteran for us to provide you assistance.
But these baseball and the junior shooting, and this sounds as if this benefits all sorts of high school students, not necessarily anyone who's got any connection with the military.
That's correct. We support the ROTC programs at Iowa State University mm-hmm. with academic awards. We're starting our 29th year here in Ames, recognizing academic excellence with Ames High School juniors and seniors, presenting them with academic letters. We also conduct programs. The Legion conducts Boys State. American Legion Auxiliary conducts Girls State. This is where we select high school students from the community, send them to, in the case of Boys State, down to Camp Dodge for a week. Girls State held here in Ames at the university, where we expose these individuals to government and get them to actually become part of a fictitious political party. They get to run for office. They get to fill that office and make decisions. Basically helps them develop their leadership skills, their public speaking skills, and gives them a better appreciation of working government.
Now, the other things that you do for veterans, have you got any stories about people you've helped?
You know, there are always different stories about individuals that have had trouble getting a claim processed by the VA, be it a medical claim or an educational assistance claim. We do that quite a bit, or if we can't help them ourselves, we send them down to our department service officer in Des Moines, and that individual helps them as well. They expedite the paperwork. They know who to talk to in the right office to try to get things moving ahead.
Right.
You know, unfortunately, you've all heard the stories of VA is a huge bureaucracy. Paperwork sometimes gets mired. Knowing how to fill out the forms and getting them to the right office can help expedite that claim.
Right.
And we're able to follow through then as well, where the veteran sometimes has difficulty doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Also part of the American Legion is the American Legion Auxiliary, which is comprised of spouses, mothers, grandmothers, and daughters of members of the American Legion. The Sons of the American Legion, which are just that, Sons of Veterans, as a separate subcategory of the American Legion. We also have the Legion Riders. And as the Legion Riders have to be a member of the American Legion Auxiliary, or the Sons of the American Legion. All four of those groups comprise what we call today the American Legion family. And as an American Legion family here in Ames, we go out and we provide help or sponsor programs with the Story County Veterans Affairs Office for homeless veterans. We provide gift cards for veterans in need of short-term financial assistance for food and clothing. The Auxiliary does a wonderful job each year with their Christmas gift program for children of needy veterans, make sure that they have Christmas gifts and things like that. A lot of different things, but the Legion's out there promoting and helping those veterans and their families.
Right. Now, you mentioned homeless veterans. Is this quite a large problem?
Fortunately, in Ames, homeless veterans are not a significant problem. And when an individual is found to be a homeless veteran, they're put in contact with the Story County Veterans Affairs Office, and they're able to help them find temporary housing and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
We carry a very strong voice. Right now, the American Legion itself is almost 2 million strong. When we add in the Auxiliary and the Sons, we're close to 4 million in members. And, you know, that's a lot of people being able to reach out to their elected officials, a collective voice for good. Military funeral honors, if you are a veteran with an honorable or general discharge, whether or not you're a member of the Legion, we will help provide military funeral honors for you if your family would like them. Many people know that the American Legion runs a medical checkout closet where we have available at no fee wheelchairs, walkers, people that are temporarily injured or invalided may need assistance with their daily lifestyle. We have that equipment that we loan out.
If people want to contact you?
We have a Facebook page, we have a website, and we have a phone number. The phone number for the post is area code 515-232-9870. That phone is answered daily from 2:30 to 10 p.m. when the post is open.
232-9870.
The post email address is alames37@aol.com. Okay. alames37@aol.com.
Okay.
Our facility is on Main Street. We've been there since sometime in the 30s. The first floor basically is the active floor for the Legion. It's broken down into our club room, which you have to be a member or a member's guest to come into. We also have what we call a party room, which is available to rent for the general community. And a lot of people come in there and rent that room for weddings, retirements, receptions. All we ask is that they come in and ask us about it. We'll be happy to show them what we have and what we can provide for them. And there's also a spot on our website that talks about that room.
The club room is, as you say, available only for members. But there is a doorbell there to ring.
There is a doorbell. Anyone who rings the doorbell, it gives us a nice smiling picture of your face and we'll let you in. You know, many people know the American Legion for bingo on Wednesday and Sunday nights. In that case, the doors open at 3 o'clock into that, if you will, party room that we talked about where we hold bingo and people can come and go as they see fit at that point.
So every Wednesday, sir?
Every Wednesday and Sunday we hold bingo.
And what time
weather permitting. On Wednesday, bingo starts at 6:30, and on Sunday, bingo starts at 6 p.m.
Okay.
The funds we get from bingo help support the programs and fund the programs that we do out in the community.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for coming to tell us about the services of the American Legion. I've been talking to Post Commander Doug McRae of the American Legion.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Radio, Story City Ames, where we bring you the people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. We've been joined in the studio by some new guests, and we're glad to have them here. We have with us Mark Harris, who lives in rural Nevada. Hello, Mark. Thanks for being here.
Good morning.
And by Teresa Blader, a master's student at ISU, and also by Ray Moranz, a postdoc in both in the entomology department at ISU. Is that right?
Yep.
Okay, so thanks for being here. And between these three folks, they know a lot about monarch butterflies, which is our next topic for this morning. And I'm going to start by asking you the question. We've been hearing a lot about a decline in monarch populations in recent years. Is it really as severe as we hear? And what have you seen that shows that? Mark, let's start with you.
Sure. Well, anecdotally, I noticed monarchs, the population decline on my little acreage out in rural Story County. And I've been out there about 24 years, and in the late 90s, early 2000s, I used to have thousands of monarchs stop on my property and roost in the trees before their fall migration to Mexico. And then I noticed a major, major decline. And now at this point, I'm lucky if I see a dozen monarchs on my property in the fall as they migrate. So I got interested in monarchs just because of these huge populations that were stopping by and started just reading about them online, and actually got involved in some tagging of monarchs for research purposes. And at some point, I could hardly tag any because I had none of them showing
and,
up.
And so when did that start happening, that you started noticing that decline?
Early 2000s, mid-2000s.
Yeah. Okay. Wow, that's quite dramatic. Mm-hmm. And Teresa and Teresa and Ray, would you concur? Have you seen I don't know if you've been following them on one piece of property like Mark has, but does that go along with your experiences?
Sure. I've definitely seen a lot fewer than in years past. And the data really confirm that. So the best data set we have are from the overwintering colonies down in Mexico. Each winter, people fly above the overwintering colonies in a helicopter. And they assess the number of monarch butterflies They estimate the number based on how many acres of forest are covered by these brilliant orange and black butterflies. And the last few years, the acreage of forest covered by monarchs is much, much less than in the past. So the best estimate, the estimate of a couple of years ago was only about 30 million monarchs. That's down from 1 billion monarchs at one point in the 1990s.
Wow. So the obvious question is, what's going on? What's causing that?
Yeah, there's a lot of different pressures that monarchs face as they migrate. And some of those are just simply, you know, basic things like, you know, parasites, pathogens. A lot of other reasons are increase in pesticide and insecticide use. And so that plays a huge role. And, of course, then herbicide use, which is played a big role in the decrease in milkweed plant, which is their host plant. So monarchs, the adults nectar on many different plants, but the caterpillar can only feed on milkweed. And, of course, milkweed used to be most present in cornfields and in crop fields like that. For some reason, it seems like they thrive with the corn or something. And so, obviously, since farmers have taken milkweed out, which is pretty understandable, you know, you need to get rid of weeds out of your fields. But as they've taken that out, what's happened is that we've really lost a lot of their habitat. So that's a huge factor as to why the population has decreased so much in these last years.
So better weed control and a more focus on that in terms of the crops planted and the herbicides that are used. And so the combination of corn that's resistant to the herbicides then increases herbicide use and kills milkweed more effectively. Would you say that's accurate?
That's the number one issue. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. All right. So maybe just back up a little bit and explain the life cycle to us and where they are at different times. Someone want to start with that?
Well, I'm here because my wife, who is also a reporter here at the radio station.
You didn't need to say that. You're here because we want
you. I have to say that. But no, I decided to buy some larvae from Monarch Watch out of Kansas.
University of Kansas.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just interested in monarchs in general, and I decided I just wanted to try to raise some. So I bought about 60 larvae, and I'm raising them. And so the larva life cycle is, of course, they lay an egg, and a female will lay a single egg on a milkweed plant. And I think this is part of the whole issue, is that they lay one egg on a plant, and they randomly fly around and lay eggs, not follow roads where you see a lot of milkweed. But then once the egg hatches, it goes through five stages, or called instars, and it just grows a little bit. Skin splits off, grows some more. And that takes somewhere around 2 weeks, depending on temperature and conditions.
And that has to happen on milkweed.
It happens on milkweed, right. There's many varieties, but the common milkweed is usually the one you find them on. And then after it reaches a certain size and age, it finds a location where it can spin a small cremaster, which is what it attaches to, like on a branch or something like that, and hangs down and forms a J shape. And after a few hours, basically the skin splits off again and becomes a chrysalis that's very beautiful, green with gold dots around it. It's very, very amazing. So, and that takes another 10 to 14 days for it to emerge. That's my understanding.
And the gold crown that's around it is actually why it's called the monarch, because other butterflies don't have this. Like it around the top of, if you can picture this little green chrysalis, around the top there's this gold, little gold dots like a crown, which is where monarch comes from, which is why it's called
that.
Monarch. Yeah.
And just to be clear, a chrysalis is what many people might call a cocoon,
right,
otherwise.
Right. And, of course, cocoons are moths, not butterflies.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
So then what happens when they hatch?
They hatch. They they mate and they lay eggs. And a female can lay, depends on how many times they mate, but they can lay 200 to 1,000 eggs. Again, one per plant.
One per plant,
right?
Yeah.
So they need a lot of plants, and they randomly fly. They don't fly along, like I said, roadways. So even though you see a lot of milkweed on roadways, it isn't necessarily conducive to monarch eggling, as far as I understand it. Only of all those hundreds of eggs, just a few survive. I mean, they have parasites, they get eaten. There's a lot of natural reasons why they don't survive.
And does that reproductive cycle take place many times throughout the summer?
Do butterflies like monarchs have a habitat? Do they live here and travel to Mexico, or do butterflies just kind of belong to the global, are they global residents?
With monarchs, it's pretty complicated. They have multiple generations per year. So we have four or in some cases five breeding generations here in the U.S. and southern Canada. And then, of course, there's the generation that flies down from southern Canada and the U.S. down to the Mexican overwintering colonies and spends the whole winter there. So your typical monarch that we see up here in summer, early summer, midsummer, late summer, only lives for a few weeks. And we actually don't have a great handle on how far each individual flies. It's very likely that some of these are flying hundreds of miles, that some of the monarchs we're seeing right now could have flown up here from Oklahoma or Kansas or Missouri, and they might be on their way to Minnesota. But it's the ones later in the year, the last generation, the generation that hatches from their chrysalids in, I believe, late August or September, those are the ones that fly south to Mexico. Those live 6 to 7 months. So quite an interesting change in their life cycle. But as far as what constitutes habitat, I think that was part of your question. Habitat for monarchs is something we're still trying to figure out more. They need milkweeds. They need nectar plants. But individual butterflies can fly, you know, again, hundreds of miles. So we're trying to figure out what we can do to bring them in to certain areas more than others.
And the nectar plants would be things that people can plant in their gardens also, and that's what the adults feed on?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Adults feed on nectar from these nectar plants. And, of course, some garden plants that are commonly that most folks have in their gardens are fine nectar plants like zinnias, sunflowers, things like that. But there are a whole host of other beautiful plants that one can provide, such as purple coneflower, butterfly bush is very popular for that purpose, Joe Pye weed, things like that. And one can plant native plants or exotic ornamentals. Many of these things, numerous plant species have excellent nectar for monarchs.
We've noticed on our property that asters are a very good fall nectar plant, so this is a plant they can feed on as they're migrating south.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And, Mark, you said you got the monarchs that you're raising from the University of Kansas Monarch Watch. Do they have other activities that they're involved in?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think they're one of the major research, monarch research, and that's where I got my tagging, little tag. So in the fall, you catch a butterfly and you put a little sticker on one of its wings with a number on it, and then you register that number with a database. And then in Mexico, I think they gather dead monarchs and look for these tags, and they can see how far they've flown and, you know, just data like that. So they sell plants, they sell kits. They have workshops. They do a lot of outreach and to bring awareness. And they've been doing it for years. But it's really in the past few years, it's really just, especially this last year, if you look at seed catalogs, they're like all marketing milkweed plants for the monarch. There's been a huge push now for creating way stations and pollinator gardens and that kind of thing. So.
Mm-hmm. And, do you think that can make a difference?
I think awareness
all of you that
has to happen to make a difference. It's a huge, huge problem with the herbicide problem on agricultural crops. So I'm not certain what the solution there is. Other people can speak to that. I have my opinions, but they're not my opinions. So.
Are way stations being created around the area here?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. So the Mark mentioned Monarch Way Stations. This is a program from the University of Kansas, and they've got quite a quite an excellent website. So again, Monarch Way Station.
And it's W-A-Y, not,
that's right.
Not Wait Way Station.
That's
so.
Right. That's right. And so it's a program by which people can register their gardens as being good monarch habitat. So one can go to their website and get information on what to plant.
And they kind of send you a little starter kit, don't they, with some plants and instructions and all of that too. So
yep, absolutely. And yes, plenty of people are doing that around here in Central Iowa. And I think if we get hundreds of thousands, millions of people to do it nationwide, that can make a difference. That can make a difference. And it's fun. And I think it is quite possible to get hundreds of thousands of people involved in this.
Mark, you're a way station?
Well, I guess I am now. not officially registered, but again, you know,
is it fun?
Oh, I love it. I mean,
why do you love it?
Well, I think just, you know, butterflies in general are just a natural beauty, kind of like flowers of the air. So I think it's an important thing. I think pollinators, I mean, just the awareness of pollinators. So I have bees also. And I have bees. It's more like I'm not into production. I just want to have pollinators. So it's kind of my donation, my payback, you know, to living out in the country. So, bees, obviously, if you've followed the bee issue, it's a pretty major problem also. So, but pollinators in general just came out yesterday in Science, I think, about bumblebees and the decline of bumblebees. So I think creating pollinator gardens, way stations, all these kind of things help the populations of pollinators, help people understand and get connected. And I think it's a positive thing. I think communities, as opposed to agricultural areas, can do a great deal. I mean, they may be the sanctuaries for pollinators because of the herbicide use and agricultural practices and other pressures that are happening. So I think communities as a whole, we have, you know, Iowa or Ames is known as a tree city, but cities could become known as pollinator cities, you know, places where there's sanctuaries and gardens for pollinators.
So places that are even densely inhabited or populated by humans could play an important role.
I think they
could
play a huge role.
It really is a lot of fun. Like all of our colleagues who have these way stations set up, they come to work and how many eggs did you find today? How many larvae did you find? Did you see any adults? And it's kind of exciting to have something. You go out and check your plant, and it's surprising, even though you don't see the butterflies. Somebody's laying eggs every once in a while.
And maybe we have just a few minutes left. Can you tell us a bit about the research that you're doing?
Sure. I have to tell you a secret I haven't told you before, which is I actually am from – I live in Oklahoma. I have a wife and kids down in Oklahoma, and I have a garden down there with lots of habitat for monarchs. I came up here this summer because of the wonderful research being done by ISU on monarch butterflies, specifically to work for the Iowa Monarch Conservation Consortium. And the research – we have many avenues of research – some of which are ongoing, some of which we're about to start. But the one I'm most involved with is helping out Teresa here with her research on monarch egg laying on milkweed. So I'll leave it to her.
Yeah, so the research that I'm doing is focusing on the density of milkweed and kind of answering the question, is a certain density more attractive or preferred by monarchs that they would lay eggs on them? So I have these little triangles set up on some Iowa State research farms, some private farms such as River Ridge Farm with Dean Bleekler. And what I'm doing, and as I'm setting up these little triangles, and at each point I have like one plant, five plants, or 10 plants to see, does it matter? Are they more attracted to more plants? Do they just fine with single plants? And so that way, what the Iowa Monarch Conservation Consortium is trying to do is reach out to the community, both the agriculture community and just, the city community, to encourage them to be planting milkweeds into, you know, underutilized farm edges or prairie lands or the riparian zones, the field and the tree lines along rivers, and to encourage them to plant milkweed. And so the question that I can help answer is, like, how should we plant them? Can I just plant single plants everywhere randomly, or is it better to, you know, group a bunch of them together And so, and it's still preliminary, but what I'm tending to find is that in these little triangles is that an adult will lay 3 or 4 eggs in this group of 10. She might lay 3 or 4 in this group of 5. And it was more rare to find it on the 1. And, of course, this is all preliminary, so, you know, mm-hmm. we're still doing more research on it. But it seems like there might be a significance there. And so it's going to help us, you know, better communicate to people what is the best way, what is going to be the most sustainable way to help increase the population. And so it's kind of interesting. And I guess we have another colleague doing some different species, like milkweed species. So Iowa has 24 milkweed species, and the more common ones that we're talking about are like Mike shared, common milkweed. But then there's also swamp milkweed, which grows in, like, you know, swamplands, mm-hmm. and then butterfly milkweed, which people see a lot because it's got these beautiful orange flowers on it when it blooms. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of other species, and so we're kind of looking at, you know, which species is the best. So. Right.
Okay. Well, is there some place where your research can be, or your results can be seen by the public?
Yeah, eventually, once we get them published, we're working with Iowa State Extension, so we'll be collaborating together to get that info out there.
Through that.
Yeah.
Well, it's your passion for monarch butterflies is clear, and so maybe you've inspired some listeners to be involved in different ways. And we'll have links to the websites that you've mentioned on our website, so people can check that out and go there. And it's also really interesting to see interest in this from just citizens and also mm-hmm. from scientists, and that the work is coming together and kind of informing each other. So
just a quick note, I have some larvae at the youth department at the public library if you want to bring your kid in to see nice. Some butterflies.
Wonderful. Okay. That's great for people to know. So thanks to all of you. We've heard from Mark Harris, who lives in Story County and has been taking it on himself to help increase monarch populations. And thanks to Tressa Blader, a master's student at ISU in entomology. And she brought along Ray Moranz, a postdoc who came all the way from Oklahoma to work on this. So thank you.
And during the presidential election seasons, KHOI is providing a weekly listing of candidate appearances in our area. Rick Perry is coming to Strategic America in West Des Moines on Monday, the 9 a.m. Jeb Bush will be at Prairie Moon Winery in Ames on Monday at 6:30 p.m. Scott Walker will be at his headquarters in Urbandale for a cookout next Friday, the 17th at 6 p.m.
And the next big one that's coming up is next Saturday, the 18th, when a whole host of Republican candidates will be at the 4th Annual Family Leadership Summit at Stevens Auditorium in Ames. That's on Saturday, the 18th. So if you want to see some of the candidates and pose questions to them, maybe about monarch butterflies and what we need to do to improve their fate, those are your opportunities. And finally, we have live music listings that Belinda Merritt has put together for us.
Hello, this is Belinda Merritt, and I have the live music for July 10th through the 16th. On Friday, July 10th, Planet Passenger will be at Snooze Hill Winery, 2183 320th Street, Madrid, from 6:30 until 9:30 p.m. Brad Myers will be at West Town Pub, 4518 Mortensen Road. The Marshall J Band will be at The Bar, 823 Wheeler Street. Saturday, July 11th, the Box Brothers will be at the Midnight Madness Race Party in downtown Ames on 6th Street by City Hall from 8 o'clock p.m. until midnight or so. Screaming for Silence will be at DG's Tap House, 125 Main Street. Final Mix will be at Crossroads Tavern, 1790 Giddings Street, Cali. On Sunday, July 12th, Johnny and the Rectifiers will be at Snooze Hill Winery, 2183 320th Street, Madrid, from 2 o'clock until 5 o'clock p.m. Fat Sky will be at Roosevelt School Summer Sundays, 912 9th Street, from 7 until 8:30 p.m. Tuesday, July 14th, Counterpunch will be at DG's Tap, 125 Main Street. On Wednesday, July 15th, the Dan Grouse Band will be at Bike Night at the Tip Top Lounge, 201 East Lincoln Way, from 5 until 8 o'clock p.m. Thursday, July 16th, Mississippi Jake, Rockets of Desire, and Fred Love will be at DG's Tap House, 125 Main Street. That's all I have for this week. Thank you.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Thank you to our studio guests, Susan Guiazda, Keith Abraham, Mark Aris, Tressa Blader, and Ray Moran. Local Talk was engineered by Rebecca Reuter, and our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kay Shelley.
If you like the show, tell your friends. Check us out on Facebook and tweet about us. You can listen to the show again and check out the links for organizations we talked about on our website at khoifm.org later today.
And remember that Harrison Barnes will be with us on Monday morning on Local Talk, 7:30. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show, so if you'd like to join the team, contact us at 292-2878. Remember, your role as a listener is what makes KHOI possible and meaningful. Thank you for listening, and we will see you again on the radio.